I haven't really woken up. Oh, until I've had my McDonald's breakfast deal. And I know this is true because before breakfast, I put my phone in the refrigerator and couldn't find the keys that were already in my hand.
Nothing gets the morning going like the first sip of an iced coffee. Get any size and any flavor for 99 cents until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. McDonald's, I'm loving it.
Hi, I'm John Bearer, the host and lead researcher for Stories of Sacrifice, American POW MIA podcast, and the U.S. POW MIA Family Locating, a free forensic genealogy public service I provide to support POW MIA families trying to get their loved one identified and brought home. First, I want to thank you, our listeners, for your interest in the Stories of Sacrifice podcast. Our goal with the podcast is to tell the world about the sacrifice these brave heroes gave for the freedoms we enjoy every day. They gave our country their last full measure. They give us their tomorrow for our freedom today. Second, we would like to raise public awareness that thousands of these heroes from World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and the Cold War have still not yet been found or returned to the United States, with many still buried as unknowns in our own national cemeteries. Their families still waiting for our government to disinter and identify them. So what can you do to support this important mission? First, if you are a relative of a missing in action service member, you can visit the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency website for more information about providing a family reference DNA sample. If you want more information, you can also contact me at john@uspowmiafamilylocating.com. Even if you're not related to an MIA, you can contact your members of Congress to request they allocate enough funding to support the POW MIA mission and to change the DPAA policy to a DNA lead process and create additional public partnerships to disinter and process the remains for those that are buried as unknown. You can also help us in our mission by sharing these podcast stories with your friends, family, and consider sharing them on your own social media. We would also appreciate if you could leave us a review on your favorite podcast app. You can also visit www.storiesofsacrifice.org and leave us a review there. You can visit our affiliate links on our website where we will earn a small commission on your purchases and no extra cost to you. If you feel moved to do so, please visit our donation links on our website to help us continue this important mission. Just sharing these stories helps us greatly, and we cannot thank you enough for listening. Sit back and relax, and we hope you enjoy today's show.
Investigators exclusive. More frustration for a former state rep who is battling the government to bring home a hero.
The lawsuit we told you about 2 years ago was suddenly dismissed. Target 12 investigator Walt Buteau joins us now with the details.
The judge in the case called the evidence provided by the families of seven soldiers buried as unknowns in the Philippines circumstantial, and he ruled in favor of the motion to dismiss filed by the government agency created to recover military remains.
Very bureaucratic. They don't.
For most of his life, former state representative John Patterson has been tracking down documents about where his uncle Sandy Nininger was buried. Nininger was awarded the Medal of Honor and called a one-man army after he was killed in action at the beginning of World War II. Patterson and his family's requests to recover Nininger's remains have been denied five times by the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency. When we first reported on this case, he did not mince words about his frustration with the DPAA.
They're not transparent. They don't answer their mail. They don't answer their phone calls. Treating us almost as the enemy.
But San Antonio-based federal judge Xavier Rodriguez ruled in favor of the agency, writing that the evidence of the location of Nininger and the other World War II soldiers tied to the case was circumstantial. Patterson, who was not available to talk on camera today, told us over the phone the soldiers' descendants and their attorneys are going through the decision to decide what to do next. Patterson says whether or not the plaintiffs appeal or file a new complaint, he is not giving up and will continue to, quote, bug the government until his heroic uncle is brought home. So far, the DPAA has not responded to our request for comment. With the Target 12 investigators, Walt Buteau, Eyewitness News.
Welcome to Stories of Sacrifice, World War II American POW MIAs in the Philippines. This is a production of the U.S. POW MIA Family Locating. I'm your host and lead researcher, John Barrett.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
World War II Medal of Honor recipient asked DoD to stop using his name. The descendants of World War II's first Medal of Honor recipient are requesting the federal government remove the soldier's name from all public buildings and installations, a move coming after what they call a decades-long bureaucratic logjam in bringing his remains home from the Philippines. First Lieutenant Alexander Sandy Nininger, serving with the 57th Infantry Regiment, Philippine Scouts, died in battle on January 12, 1942. Near Abuque on the Bataan Peninsula, Luzon Island, during the Japanese invasion. He was given a hasty burial and subsequently became the war's first service member to receive the Medal of Honor in the early days of the conflict when Imperial Japan invaded and occupied a huge swath of Asia. They needed a hero, John Patterson, Nininger's 84-year-old nephew, told Stars and Stripes during a phone interview Monday from his home in Rhode Island. They needed somebody to talk about. They needed help with morale in terms of all of the disasters in the Pacific. Nininger's Medal of Honor citation describes the young officer moving single-handedly against the invaders. Though exposed to heavy enemy fire, he continued to attack with rifle and hand grenades and succeeded in destroying several enemy groups in foxholes and enemy snipers, the citation said. Patterson has spent his adult life working to bring his uncle's remains home from the Philippines, a mission he inherited from his mother, the soldier's sister, who had taken up the work from her father. On Tuesday, the 79th anniversary of Nininger's death, Patterson sent a letter to Secretary of the Army Ryan McCarthy, Acting Defense Secretary Christopher Miller, West Point Superintendent Lieutenant General Darrell Williams, and other officials requesting on behalf of the family that Nininger's name be removed from federal properties. Nininger was a 1941 graduate of West Point, where stands the namesake Nininger Hall, among other memorials at the Academy. The family is also asking the Veterans Administration to no longer use Nininger's name for a veterans nursing home in South Florida. This is not what my family wanted to do, and we gave this decision a lot of thought, but we no longer believe that it is appropriate for the government to use Sandy's name to represent the highest military ideals. They aren't willing to lift a finger to identify him, Patterson wrote. His case has been stuck in a bureaucratic logjam for more than 70 years, and we are beyond frustrated. We are aware that while Sandy's memory continues to be used to inspire future leaders, the government itself has failed miserably to live up to the ideals he exemplified in life, he wrote. A spokesperson for the Army Secretary told Stars and Stripes on Tuesday that McCarthy was not available to comment on the letter. Patterson spent years researching the death and burial of Nininger, reviewing early documentation and interviewing veterans with firsthand knowledge of events in January 1942. In the 1990s, while working in the Philippines for the U.S. government, he investigated burial grounds near the battle site. He became convinced that the remains in an unknown grave designated Manila X-1130 are those of Nininger. The U.S. government has denied Patterson's repeated requests to exhume the remains for analysis. In 2017, Patterson was one of seven plaintiffs who filed a lawsuit in federal court seeking to force the federal government, including the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency, the entity primarily tasked with identifying remains, to conduct DNA tests on sets of remains buried as unknowns in the Philippines. In July 2019, the judge dismissed the case in a summary judgment for the defendants. Both POW and its precursor, the Joint POW MIA Accounting Command, have maintained for years that a physical description of the remains documented during the years immediately after the war is not a close enough match to Nininger's build to warrant exhumation. This fall, Patterson took his quest for disinterment of X-1130 to Defense Department officials above the level of POW. He was assisted by Jed Henry, a successful MIA investigator and founder of the nonprofit Private First Class Lawrence Gordon Foundation. In an email to Henry on December 23rd, POW Director Kelly McKeague reiterated the agency's stance, writing that disinterring X-1130 still cannot be validated by POW's research. which, as you know, shows significant stature, ancestry, and recovery location discrepancies for the X-1130 remains to belong to First Lieutenant Nininger. McKeague said the agency was continuing to actively explore possible burial sites used by the U.S. Army in the Philippines in 1942. ENPA's historians had submitted six other disinterment proposals from the Manila American Cemetery for which Mr. Patterson's uncle is a candidate. Responding to McKeague, Henry wrote that conducting DNA testing on X-1130 would be a win-win situation. If ENPA is committed to living up to the fullest possible accounting, it will one day have to disinter X-1130, so why not do it while the family is alive and can pay their respects? Henry wrote, if X-1130 would unfortunately turn out not to be Nininger, then the DNA test can be used to identify one of his comrades. Patterson argues that DNA testing on X-1130 might cost a few thousand dollars, a tiny sum compared to what ENPA spends annually. It's also worth noting that in the last 6 years, ENPA has been appropriated more than $832 million, and with that money have only made 962 identification S, which shows it's costing more than $865,000 per identification, Patterson wrote in his letter to defense officials. Sandy's country has failed him, and because of that, we ask that the U.S. government promptly begin the process of removing the name of Lieutenant Alexander R. Nininger Jr. from all federal facilities and cease trading on his good name and reputation, he wrote in conclusion. Further, if the U.S. government is unable to find and identify the remains of Lieutenant Nininger, please allow my family to hire our own professionals to do the job, and we will cover whatever the costs may be. In DoD reversal, agency will analyze remains thought to be World War II's first Medal of Honor recipient. The Defense Department on Wednesday agreed to analyze remains in a Philippines grave long believed by family members to be those of Alexander Sandy Nininger Jr., the first service member awarded the Medal of Honor during World War II. The Defense POW MIA accounting agency and its precursors had denied repeated requests by the family to exhume the remains for DNA testing, maintaining that the agency's documentation could not validate taking that step. I've directed but to immediately generate the necessary exception to policy in order to expeditiously execute scientific analysis of the remains to confirm or deny identification. Anthony Tata, currently performing the duties of Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, said in an email Wednesday sent to Defense Department officials and John Patterson, who is Nininger's nephew and closest next of kin. The exception to policy comes a day after Patterson sent a letter to Defense Department officials on behalf of the family requesting that the soldier's name be removed from all federal installations, plaques, and other sites. Patterson expressed frustration over what he described as a bureaucratic logjam on his uncle's case. Sandy's country has failed him, and because of that, we ask that the U.S. government promptly begin the process of removing the name of Lieutenant Alexander R. Nininger Jr. from all federal facilities and cease trading on his good name and reputation, Patterson concluded in the letter, which was detailed in a Stars and Stripes article Tuesday. Patterson was stunned about the speed of the policy reversal after the release of the letter, he said during an interview with Stars and Stripes on Wednesday from his Rhode Island home. This is obviously the furthest we've ever gotten, he said. The bottom line is, I'm pleased and now I want to wait and see what their action is, and when. Tata told Stars and Stripes on Wednesday he had learned of Patterson's letter in an email he read during a flight back to the United States on Tuesday after a week of official international travel. He reviewed the case Wednesday morning. This is the first time I've really had an opportunity to review the case, he said. If there's a chance, even if it's remote, to discover the identity of these remains, then I think that is something we should do. I believe we have no more solemn duty than to take care of our fallen and their families. Nininger, a 1941 West Point graduate, was serving with the 57th Infantry Regiment, Philippine Scouts, as he defended against the Japanese invasion of the Philippines. He died on January 12, 1942, near a Abuque on the Bataan Peninsula, Luzon Island, and was hastily buried. He became the first service member to receive the Medal of Honor during World War II. Medals of Honor were subsequently awarded to service members involved in the earlier Japanese surprise attack on Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941. Though exposed to heavy enemy fire, he continued to attack with rifle and hand grenades and succeeded in destroying several enemy groups in foxholes and enemy snipers, Nininger's Medal of Honor citation said.
Welcome to Stories of Sacrifice, American POW/MIA's podcast. Today I'm going to bring you the final part about Lieutenant Alexander Nininger, whose family was able to finally convince the DPAA and the federal government to disinter the remains marked as 11X1130 at the Manila American Cemetery. They convinced them to get those remains disinterred and hopefully identified as Nininger. So today I wanted to kind of bring you the kind of closure to that case. And I've done some previous podcasts about how, you know, the whole Nininger fiasco and how it happened. I brought you that in a couple different podcasts or in a couple different videos that I'll link below in the notes. So you can go back and watch those if you feel like you want to. So today, what I'm going to do is bring you kind of, I'm going to read through these classified files. That was for Lieutenant Ira B. Cheney. And what had happened is, you can go back to the first podcast I did with about Cheney. It'll kind of explain this, but I'm going to go through this classified file because it has something else to do with four or five other 57th Infantry officers that were also killed in action. And they are classified as missing in action today. Again, these are possibly men that are buried at the Manila American Cemetery is unknown, along with Lieutenant Alexander Nininger. The case is closely related. So I'm going to bring this information to you and kind of, you know, read out this classified file to you. It's a series of phone calls and conversations that the Army Graves Registration or the Army Memorial Division in Washington, D.C. is having with a bunch of men that are officers that had served with Nininger and the others. And I'm going to go through this file and kind of give you an idea of what's going on here. When Nininger, when they disinter remains 1130, there's some really good researchers that are pretty sure that those remains belong to Nininger. But in the possibility that they aren't, they could possibly belong to one of these other men here. And the one that's closely related in this classified file is Lieutenant Maynard, David Maynard. So I'm going to kind of brief you through this file. And hopefully here in the near future, I'll have another podcast episode with Lieutenant Maynard's family. So again, this is Captain Vogel having conversations with other officers of the 57th Infantry Regiment, Philippine Scouts. Phoned Colonel Clark, who was Nininger's commanding officer, concerning Nininger's burial place in the Philippines. Colonel Clark has written that he has personally attended the burial services. Said that the remains of Nininger were buried a few feet from the church. This, of course, implied that the remains were buried in the churchyard. When I told Colonel Clark that a thorough search both in and outside of the churchyard failed to recover Nininger's remains, he said that it could be very possible that the remains had been removed by the Japanese. While Colonel Clark could not have gave me positive assurance that this occurred, he cited two possible reasons for such a removal. Nininger battled the Japanese heroically, killing quite a number of them before he himself was killed. The Japanese may have decided to dispose of his remains rather than have the Americans use Nininger as an example for heroic action. The other possible reason cited by Colonel Clark is that when the Japanese captured the area, finding a new grave, they may have decided to search the grave not only to ascertain the casualty, but to search for any secret papers or documents which may have been hidden. Colonel Clark emphasized that these were only possibilities since we have been unable to locate the remains. He suggested that we notify Mr. Nininger of their non-recoverability after we have checked all other unknown recovered from Albuquerque. Vogel phoned Mr. Franklin O. Alders, Lieutenant Colonel, and located him at his residence in Leamington, Ontario, Canada. I told Colonel Alders that I was phoning him as a result of a quotation in a file of the late Lieutenant Maynard. I referred to this letter to the father of Lieutenant Maynard, in which he wrote, "In the first 4 days, we lost your son, Lieutenant Maynard, Lieutenant Kenneth Wilson, Lieutenant Compton, Lieutenant Green, Lieutenant Nininger, and Captain Mayer. Father Sekna conducted services at the graves of the American officers killed at Mabangtang in the Abaque churchyard. I also advised Colonel Alders that I had phoned Colonel Clark, who was commanding officer of the 57th Infantry Regiment, at the time Nininger and his fellow officers were killed. Before going into detail concerning the death of Nininger and his fellow officers, Colonel Alders asked me if I knew the story on Colonel Clark. I told him that only information I had of Colonel Clark was what appeared in the files of the decedents, and that this implied that Colonel Clark departed before the Japanese captured the entire Philippines. He suggested that I look into his 201 file. I asked Colonel Alders why he thought this was necessary. Colonel Alders said Colonel Clark was relieved of his command shortly after the engagement, in which Lieutenant Nininger and his fellow officers lost their lives. He further stated that Colonel Clark did not attend the burial services conducted by Father Sekna in the Abaque churchyard. The following is in substance to the information furnished by Colonel Alders of the incidents and events which transpired during the engagement. Colonel Alders said that the Japanese artillery had shelled the entire area and a considerable number of their infantry had infiltrated close to the positions held by the 57th Infantry Regiment. The shelling severely damaged some of the buildings in the Abaque churchyard. The Abaque church and its adjoining buildings were used as the headquarters of the 57th Infantry Regiment. It was during this infiltration and shelling that Lieutenant Nininger, Compton Green, Wilson, and Maynard lost their lives. The remains of these officers were brought into the churchyard cemetery as soon as the action quieted. Father Sekna had the graves dug and conducted a brief burial service. Colonel Alders, as well as several other officers, were present at the services. Colonel Alders believes that one or more of the officers were buried in boxes furnished by the quartermaster, and that the rest were laid in the ground with only a blanket around them. He also remembers that there were identification tags were found on a decedent, and one had been removed and turned over to the medics. The other was inserted into the mouth of the decedent. Colonel Alders does not know whether burial reports were prepared. All matters pertaining to the burial were left to the hands of Father Sekna, who died later while a prisoner of the Japanese. Colonel Anders brought up the fact that the churchyard was shelled by both Japanese and American forces. Particularly heavy shelling was given to the church and the surrounding area by the Americans after the location was abandoned to the Japanese. Information was received that the Japanese were using it as their headquarters, and Anders believed that the result of the shelling by the American forces, some of the graves may have been destroyed and their remains scattered. Colonel Anders also brought up the matter of searching of the graves after the Japanese had captured Abaque. He said that our own forces many times searched mounds and graveyards, since the Japanese in a number of instances stored arms and ammunition in the gravesites. He said that perhaps the Japanese believed that we may have used the graves as storage place for ammunition and decided to dig the gravesites. Through such an operation, their remains became lost. I told Colonel Anders of the 14 graves we found on the outside of the church wall, and that the examination of these remains indicated 2 were Americans and 12 were Filipinos. I told him one grave was that of Lieutenant McCurdy, and the other American, having no identifying characteristics, was still designated as unknown. Colonel Anders asked me to read him the names of the Filipinos we found outside the wall. I read the names to him, and he said he knew them all. He told me that the individual listed as Castro should be Castro Mania. I asked whether it was possible that these 5 officers, whose remains have not been recovered, could have been buried on the outside of the churchyard wall. He said, to the best of his memory, the men were buried in the churchyard proper. However, if a reburial during Japanese occupation occurred, the remains may have been reinterred outside the churchyard. Colonel Anders said this was merely a guess and that it should not be accepted as fact. In my long conversation with Colonel Anders. It was very apparent that he knew and recalled more about the events subsequent to the death of these officers than did Colonel Clark. Colonel Clark appeared hesitant in giving information, always referring me to letters he sent to the AG or the next of kin. On the other hand, Colonel Anders tried to assist in every way possible by volunteering information so that we could have a complete understanding of what transpired immediately after these officers were killed. He said he will make himself available to furnish any additional information which we may not have discussed at this time. In addition, he suggested that I communicate with Lieutenant Colonel Johnson and Lieutenant Colonel Olson for their version of the events, which took place after Lieutenant Nininger and his fellow officers were killed. On the 24th of October, he phoned Major Johnny Olson, Student Detachment Command General Staff College, Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, confirmed to a general extent of information furnished by Lieutenant Colonel Anders. However, he was more specific on the battle action which took the lives of Lieutenant Nininger and his fellow officers. Major Olson said he did not attend the internment service for Nininger or any other officers killed in the engagement. He said he remembers Nininger's death and that he was informed that Nininger, as well as several other officers' remains, were recovered and buried in or near the Albuquerque churchyard. He never had time to visit any graves, but he heard that Anders and Captain Francis, the dental officer, were with Chaplain Seca when the remains were buried. Major Olson asked me what remains were recovered nearby or in the churchyard at Albuquerque. He said he desired this information to refresh his memory on the various officers who were killed in the engagement. I started off by giving him the names of Lieutenant McCurdy, and then he mentioned Lieutenant Cheney. Here, Major Olson interrupted. He said that Cheney could not have been interred in or near Albuquerque Churchyard since he was killed long after the town of Albuquerque was abandoned to the Japanese. I told Major Olson that I was referring to the names of all officers reported as buried and was not limiting myself to those interred in or near the churchyard. Major Olson said that Cheney was not killed in that engagement, but was killed in action off the west coast near the town of Gloma. This occurred on the 30th of January, 42, at least 10 days after the Albuquerque had been evacuated. He said Lieutenant Cheney's platoon had been withdrawn on about 20 January to be attached to the 3rd Battalion. This battalion was endeavoring to confine the Japanese who landed on the west coast. He said it was during an assault on the Japanese positions at Quinine Point when Lieutenant Cheney was killed, and his remains were taken to Marviella's Cemetery for interment. Major Olson continued that the arrangements for the burial in Marviella's was made or supervised by Captain Anthony, who was Cheney's commanding officer. The rest of the discussion related to the positions of the 57th Regiment after the fall of Albuquerque. Olson said that they fell back to the line about a mile south of Belonga. This was on or about 22nd January 1942. On or about 30 January 42, the 57th Regiment was somewhat broken up, and many of its units were sent to the west coastal areas to support troops endeavoring to prevent Japanese landings. He suggested I communicate with Major Sanders, regimental personnel officer, as well as Captain Anthony. Note, the comment of Major Olson concerning Lieutenant Cheney first brought out the possibility that the remains now interred in the cemetery at West Point may not be those of this decedent. The 293 file of Lieutenant Cheney indicates his remains were recovered from Albuquerque Churchyard, 12 paces to the right of the south center of the door of this church. The location of the alleged grave was obtained from a copy of a letter Mr. Cheney, the father, wrote to Congressman Nixon on 4 January 1948. In this letter, Mr. Cheney said that he met Colonel Clark, and after much talking to Colonel Clark, said Cheney was buried 12 steps to the right from the south center of the door. On the basis of this information, A cable was sent to the Overseas Command requesting them to investigate. The Overseas Command located remains 12 steps from the door, and the remains were designated as those of Lieutenant Cheney. The report indicates no identifying clue recovered with the remains. Since Lieutenant Cheney was killed on 30 January 1942, approximately 30 miles away from Abake, it is evident that the remains of Lieutenant Cheney could not have been buried at Abake Churchyard, which had been lost to the Japanese on about 21 January 42. Captain Vogel phoned Major Cecil M. Sanders and located him at Fort Benning, Georgia, where he was assigned as an instructor at infantry school. Major Sanders' report on the events which transpired during the subsequent to the engagement varied to a certain degree with information furnished by Colonel Anders. Sanders was a regimental S1 and as such had direct charge of the personnel records. In the course of the engagement, he performed actual combat duty since the casualty among the officers were unusually heavy and he was called to direct the activities of detached companies and platoons. The following, in substance, is the information I obtained from Major Sanders. The Abake Church and its adjoining building had not been selected nor had been in use as regimental headquarters before the start of the battle. It was after the Japanese had infiltrated near the American positions on the outskirts of Abake that headquarters was set up at Abake Church. Lieutenants Nininger, Compton, Green, Wilson, and Maynard were holding positions in the outskirts of Abake when the Japanese penetrated to a point where they either had to be driven out of the town of Abake or driven out or the town of Abake evacuated. Lieutenant Nininger was killed after he routed the Japanese who had infiltrated close to the Abake Church area. His heroic effort won him the first Congressional Medal of Honor in World War II. The remains of Lieutenant Nininger were brought back to the churchyard and turned over to Father Sekna, who had assumed charge of burying all the remains. Lieutenant Nininger had been killed on 12 January 42 about 9 o'clock in the morning. Lieutenant Green was killed while in a foxhole as a result of a Japanese mortar shells. Lieutenant Compton was in the foxhole with Lieutenant Green, managed to get out and assumed command of the platoon. 15 minutes later, Lieutenant Compton was killed as he was leading the platoon in attack on the Japanese positions in an endeavor to silence the Japanese mortar batteries. Major Sanders said that he was quite certain that the remains of Compton were never recovered. With respect to Lieutenant Green, he made the following remark. Although I know that the body was badly cut up, I believe someone told me that they took the body out of the foxhole and delivered it to the churchyard. However, my memory is not clear on this, and I didn't want you to look upon this as official. Compton and Green had been killed in the afternoon of 12 January 1942. Lieutenant Wilson was killed late in the afternoon of 12 January 42 while endeavoring to bring some wounded back to the temporary hospital set up in Abake. He eventually had taken a jeep and managed to load a couple of wounded boys when he himself was hit. The Japanese machine gun almost severed his body at the waist. This statement by Major Sanders confirms the previous information which was obtained on Wilson from Sergeant Wilson's platoon. With respects to Lieutenant Maynard, Major Sanders did not recall exactly how he was killed, but he remembers that Maynard's body was brought to a place near the Abake Church and turned over to Father Sekna. Maynard was also killed on 12 January 42. In connection with the above information, Major Sanders said that it is possible, after so many years, he may have incidents pertaining to one or more of these officers confused with what happened to the other. However, he feels reasonably sure that, in general, the information he gave me reflects the events which happened on 12 January 1942. Major Sanders then asked me if we had recovered the remains of Lieutenants McCurdy and Cheney. I told him that McCurdy's remains had been found on the outskirts of the south wall of the churchyard. Realizing that there was a question on the recovery of Cheney's remains, I told him that I did not have the file at hand, but believed that the remains had been recovered. Major Sanders then asked me whether I knew where Cheney had been killed. I told him that I believed it was Algoma Point. He said this was correct and that it was either in either the 30th or 31st of January of 1942. He then suggested that in the event that we did not recover Cheney's remains, we communicate with Captain Eugene H. Anthony, who was Cheney's commander. He told me that Captain Anthony had developed tuberculosis while a prisoner of war and has been retired for physical disability. I told Major Sanders that I would communicate with Captain Anthony, not only to discuss Cheney, but also for any other information he may have concerning the burial of Nininger, Compton, Green, Wilson, or any of the others. Major Sanders asked me about Captain Meyer. I told him we had recovered the remains, which were buried in Marvie Ellis Cemetery, approximately 20 miles from Abiquay. Major Sanders said that we should communicate with both Lieutenants Ernest Wormps, regimental surgeon, and Major Garrett P. Francis, a dental officer. He said that actually Major Francis knew more about the burials than the colonel, since the surgeon seemed to develop battle fatigue after the first Japanese shell hit in Abiquay. It was Major Francis who more or less performed the emergency surgical work in the field. Major Francis also assisted in recovering remains and helping Father Sekna. Major Sanders feels quite certain that Major Francis attended the interments at Abiquay Church. In order to clarify certain discrepancies in the information furnished by Colonel Anders, Major Sanders and Major Olson, I again phoned Colonel Anders to ascertain whether he was certain that the remains of all five officers, Nininger, Compton, Green, Wilson, and Maynard, were buried side by side in the churchyard at Abiquay. Colonel Anders said that after review of what he had previously told me, he expressed concern, least I believe, that they were all buried side by side. He said that if he had given me that impression, it was not correct. He definitely remembers that Nininger and Maynard were buried close together. He is not sure whether Compton's remains were recovered, but remembers hearing a report there wasn't much of him left. He feels reasonably sure that Wilson was buried in or near the churchyard and that Green's body was recovered. So this is where it really ties in Nininger and Maynard together as being buried close together. And there was a hospital that had been set up, and a lot of these remains were actually recovered from that hospital area, and that's where remains 11X1130 were located. And there was officers that were buried, it was officers' row in that cemetery. But I'll link back the past podcast to Nininger, and that'll give you more idea of what happened during that time and how we figured out where Lieutenant Nininger or remains X1130 were buried. And that'll give you, or it'll show you how we're kind of linking Maynard to Nininger and why this may be important. Hopefully here in the next few weeks, we'll be able to have an interview with Lieutenant David Maynard's family, and we'll discuss this some more.
Thank you for listening to Stories of Sacrifice, World War II, American, POW, MIAs in the Philippines. This has been a production of the U.S. POW, MIA Family Locating. You can find us on the web at uspowmiafamilylocating.com. Opinions expressed in this podcast are our own and given in the best intention. Overall, the POWMIA accounting community is doing what it can with limited resources. It is our hope additional federal funding will be provided, along with additional partnerships established to disinter and process the remains of our unknowns located in the national cemeteries. You can help by contacting your congressional representatives and asking that they implement a DNA lead policy for those unknown POWMIAs. Thank you for listening.
drop some garlic and croutons on there, and the rest is salad history. I made the best salad ever, people, and now I'm making the best app. The Caesar Sportsbook app got live in-game betting, parlays, and Caesar rewards. Caesar salad ain't got nothing on my app. Nothing!
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call, text, or chat 1-888-532-3500. Download the Caesar Sportsbook app. Your app is ready, Emperor.
Everybody needs just the right amount of fuel to get going in the morning. For some, a nice McDonald's egg and cheese bagel is just enough to do it. Others might prefer a McDonald's bacon egg and cheese bagel. Or perhaps a sausage egg and cheese bagel. And there are those where nothing will do but a hearty McDonald's steak egg and cheese bagel. Four different breakfast bagels to get you going. Tomorrow morning, give your engine a head start at participating McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.